Hello and welcome to the first episode of the All Auburn All In podcast. I'm your host, Tony Perry, and I'm here with my co-host and good friend,
Daniel Welker.
Guys, we're here to talk about some Auburn football, and we realize you don't have 10 plus hours a week to listen to every Auburn podcast under the sun and get every hot take and opinion that you can think of. And so Daniel and I, our goal here is really to sort of sum everything up for you and present a few of those ideas and maybe let you think for yourself a little bit, or just kind of listen to us stand up on our soapboxes for a little while. I just figured I'd start us out by giving a little background information about us. So my freshman year at Auburn was in 2010. I went to every home game and also actually won a student body ticket and got to go to the national championship. And then I had a two-year run where I went to every single game, including road games. And that included every single game in 2012. So I'm certainly no fair weather fan. Daniel, how did you end up here?
Well, I'm a lifelong Auburn fan. Actually, I was introduced to the Auburn family by my babysitter growing up, who, when she babysat me, always watched Auburn football. So I became a fan at an early age, and currently I am an offensive coach for Kell High School here in Georgia. They're based out of Marietta, Georgia. So I have some insight to the X's and O's of things. So, and I also grew up in the state of Alabama, so I'm very familiar with the Alabama-Auburn rivalry as well as the Auburn-Georgia rivalry, as I now currently reside in Canton, Georgia.
And I grew up in Fairhope, Alabama. After several years out in Auburn, I have since migrated out to Ogden, Utah, where I'm living life, but just as big of an Auburn fan as I've ever been. But moving on, and enough about our personal lives, Auburn's 2-0. We
just like we like it.
Absolutely. We had a fantastic win against Oregon. Maybe fans are thinking a suspect win against Tulane. And I don't know if I'm buying that just yet. But before we dig into the Tulane game, I think maybe we could maybe start with game one, Oregon. The legacy, Bo Nix, the legend, if you will, got us off to an exciting start. Daniel, what'd you think of that game?
Well, I have to admit, in the preseason, I was more of a Joey Gatewood fan. I figured, you know, Gus was going to go with more of the veterans. So, Bo had a lot to prove to me. And let me tell you, he proved it, and go, Bo, go. I was very impressed with him. He grew up, but be right before our eyes. By the fourth quarter, man, he was looking like a senior out there. I was a great game manager, loved seeing that. So that's kind of where I was coming from on it.
Yeah, I tend to agree. That second half, he just gave off that vibe. He was a leader. The team bought in. First half, a little rough. Two interceptions. He even got sacked for the first time since his junior season. Just a crazy stat to think about. Bo Nix was in my opinion, certainly not the reason Auburn was struggling. The problem, I think, as anybody with eyeballs could tell, was the offensive line. They just were not getting a whole lot of push. Now, the defense is another story, and we'll get to that in a minute, but just focusing on the offense here to get us started. What did it look like to you, Daniel? Why was Auburn not able to get the running game going?
Well, I think the team, you know, they might have been sipping a little bit of that Kool-Aid of, you know, we're an SEC team. They're not ready for the smash mouth football that we normally play. And then that first quarter, they came out and, for all intents and purposes, they hit us in the mouth. There's really no other way to put it. And, you know, that offensive line and the defense, as we'll get to in a little bit, you know, they said, okay, boys, they're ready to play some SEC football. Let's bring it to them. And, you know, as we say at Kell, I think after that first quarter, they found out that Oregon wasn't soft like Charmin baby tissue like they might have thought. And they said, okay, let's bring our A game. And I think, you know, we saw that because once the defense kind of put their head into the game and the offensive line said, let's give it to them, that was all she wrote, boys.
Absolutely. I really liked how everything sort of came together there, especially – later in the second quarter, they really started moving the ball. But, you know, all off season we kept hearing about how many running backs we had. Gus Malzahn, even when he posted the first depth chart, started with 6 starting running backs listed as ORs. He listed every single running back, which now I've heard a rumor or two that maybe that was more of a punishment to Booby Whitlow, based on some reports that maybe he was getting a little lazy in practice. I'm not sure, but once it came down to game time, not very many people were getting that many carries. In fact, Booby Whitlow ended up with 24 carries, the lion's share of the carries in that Oregon game. 110 yards, 4.6 yards a carry. No one else outside of Bo Nix really getting it done in that department. Cam Martin sitting at 2.8 yards a carry and only 4 carries. Sean Shivers had 4 carries for only 2 yards. Daniel, maybe what's going on at running back? I think Auburn fans realize they've been watching the past few years, and Gus Malzahn has a tendency to run running backs into the ground. Kerryon Johnson was not healthy in that SEC championship game in 2017, and fans are worried that Gus is going to run Booby into the ground.
I kind of have a similar theory. I know that you and I, we talked a little bit before the Tulane game, saying, you know, it's probably not going to be a good thing if Booby has 24 carries again, we're going to be a little worried. I mean, I know another topic between us was like, okay, you know, we were probably going to see a little bit of DJ Williams. We later found out, you know, he was injured. Not really sure of the extent of that injury. But, I mean, like you said, you know, 6 running backs, you know. I think you know, this upcoming Kent State game is going to be the perfect time to find out, you know, you know, who another dog is at that running back, you know, because if we don't get another dog at that running back, we're going to be in trouble. Because I love Booby, he's great, but he's not going to be able to sustain that 20-something carries a game, you know, once we get into hardcore SEC play.
Yeah, shout out to Van Allen Plexico of the AU Wishbone podcast. Love listening to their show. He said, kind of going into this Oregon game, that it looks like Auburn doesn't have depth at running back. They have diversity. Auburn's got six guys that all have a very specific role, but only Booby Whitlow's that every down back. Now, optimism, people are trying to think optimistically. We believe we believe DJ Williams can be that next guy, but, you know, as we found out, he was hurt. And then going into that Tulane game, Booby did, in fact, had to get 23 carries again. Just not getting it done. Auburn's going to have to find another back, and hopefully with this Kent State game coming up, somebody can really... we can figure out some depth at that position. But, alas, those final couple of drives, Auburn kept going down, and Daniel, why don't you tell us what you saw happen?
Well, as I mentioned, being a lifelong Auburn fan, I did notice something that, you know, it really tugged at my heartstrings a little bit. You know, of course, as those who saw the Oregon game saw, we had the touchdown in the end, number 18, Seth Williams. Interesting note, this was not the first time that number 18 in an Auburn jersey put the dagger in Oregon players and fans' heart and sent them home crying, because in that 2010, Wes Byram, not many people realize this, but he wore number 18, and he kicked the game-winning field goal that ultimately brought that national championship to the Plains.
And what a kick it was. And on top of that, Cody Burns, Auburn's current wide receiver coach, also wore number 18. And he scored his first and only touchdown of the 2010 season in that Oregon game. So just visions of number 18 in their heads.
Well, and one last note on the number 18. For all these moments that we've just talked about, I was wearing my number 18 jersey watching the game. You know, I don't like to get into too much superstition, but it did happen.
Nice. Nice. As usual, I was wearing my number 2 Cam Newton jersey from that very national championship game with the patch that I got shortly after that season. But maybe moving on from all the offensive talk, defense. Defense is something else. Auburn, after these two games in the S&P Plus rankings, coming out as the number 2 defense in the country. A lot to look forward to there. Justin Herbert was running for his life. There weren't very many sacks, but there were a ton of QB pressures. And I think it greatly affected the play calling in both the Oregon and Tulane game. Oregon was going left, going right. It seemed like the game plan was to get the ball away from Derrick Brown. What do you think, Daniel?
Well, they definitely did not want anything to do with Derrick Brown, that's for sure. But I think that they may have found out that, as we, as Auburn fans already knew, we're not looking at a one-man defensive line, that's for sure. One thing that we haven't always had is we definitely got some depth at that defensive line. And I know that we'll talk about the corners later, so I'm just going to put a pin in that, and we'll discuss that later. But I think it's a lot like, you know, we talked about on the offense. You know, there in the first quarter, they may have, you know, been saying, you know, we're better than them. And then they hit them in the mouth a couple times, and they woke up, you know. We, you know, I know you and I have heard it said that it wasn't so much, you know, defensive changes by Coach Steele as it was the defense just kind of deciding, hey, let's play some football. And, you know, if you compare first half numbers to second half numbers, it really reflects that.
Absolutely. Oregon, 174 yards in the first quarter. Just a little more than 150 the final three quarters combined. An absolute clinic by Kevin Steele, and really credit to those players for going out and executing. We talked all offseason about we're losing not just the three starting senior linebackers, but even Andrew Williams, another senior linebacker who was a backup there. Four guys all gone out of that linebacker core, and Auburn brings in five-star freshman Owen Papo, who looked fantastic in his debut, also number 10 like Bo Nix, but also waiting for their turn behind all those seniors were these juniors, Jacoby McClain, KJ Downhill Britt. These guys looked phenomenal. They were fast. I realized they're, you know, they're not the seniors. They're not those quite the quarterback on the field that Deshaun Davis was, but I think these linebackers are more athletic. KJ Britt is fast. He looks like a gladiator. And Owen Papo was going in pass coverage. Daniel, is it possible that we lost four senior linebackers and actually got better?
I fully believe that. And one small note on Owen Papo, man, I was fanboying hard, ready for him to don that orange and blue, because living here in Georgia, I got to watch him last year at the Corky Kell Classic, and, you know, I kind of kept my fingers crossed that he wouldn't flip on us last second, like some names we're not going to mention. You know, I was excited to, you know, when he signed that dotted line, and you know, I tried to kind of curtail my excitement, because, you know, these freshmen, they're not always ready, but coming out of the high school program here in Georgia that he came out of, they're noted for turning out like amazing people at Grayson. Recently I was talking with some coaches, and they were saying, man, I just wish that Gus Malzahn would keep his hand out of Georgia, because, you know, Kirby Smart can't get any of these guys to come between Gus Malzahn and Dabo Swinney, because, you know, they're loving the pot here in Georgia. It's rich in talent, but, you know, it's hard to get them to go to Georgia. I kind of told them, you know, it's not, you can't blame Auburn for being better than Georgia. You know, that was a little bit of the Auburn fan coming out on in me, but, you know, I feel amazing because, you know, we got the depth, and, man, I just love that Owen Papo is a freshman, and we at least got 3 years with him.
Absolutely. And then moving on to that secondary, this secondary looks good. We've got Noah Igmanogany, who's now in his second year as a corner, which, just to mention that both of his parents are Olympic athletes, so if anyone's going to switch from wide receiver to corner, and learn the position quickly. It's him. But then from there, we had Javaris Davis, who played nickel for us last year. He moved over to corner, and he's filling in for that, was it Carlton Davis or, sorry, Jamel Dean. Filling in for Jamel Dean over there as our four-star sophomore Christian Tutt steps up for the nickel position. Javaris, you could kind of tell he was new to that corner position. And then just briefly also, we've got the seniors at the safety position, Jeremiah Denson and Daniel Thomas. Mix in a couple other talented sophomores with Smoke Monday. These guys, they look deep and they look good, and combined with this defensive line, this might be as good a defense as Gus Malzahn has had since he's been here on the Plains.
Yeah, and one thing that, you know, I like, which I'm, you know, we'll go ahead and mention this. I mean, I know it's more in the two-lane game, but I'm kind of going to combine them. You know, we didn't really see Oregon pick on Noah Iggy much. Tulane, I don't know what they saw in their film study, but for some reason, they thought that they wanted to pick on Noah Iggy a bunch. And, you know, as they found out, that's a no-go. And I can promise you, going forward, any coach that looks at that on film, they're going to say, you know what, I think I'm going to leave Noah Iggy alone, because every time you throw at him, you're risking a pick. I know it's coming. The more they pick on him, so he's going to get that pick here sooner rather than later. But I can tell you one thing. He's not going to allow many receptions, if any.
No, absolutely not. And we didn't hear his name called very much in those two games. And really, that's what you want in your star corner. If he's not getting his name called, it means teams are not throwing in his direction. It definitely felt like there in that entire second half, I'm not sure if Oregon bothered to throw in his direction. Javaris, though, maybe it was some early game jitters. I'm not really sure. He gave up that touchdown to Oregon and kind of got caught flat-footed. Didn't even really, wasn't able to jump after the ball. Hasn't really had much of a problem since. I've been happy with his speed. I've been happy with his coverage. I'm not ready to say that he's hopefully the lockdown corner that Noah Igmanogany is, but I'm feeling very good with the direction that Javaris is going. And then as far as interceptions and turnovers, of course, Justin Herbert didn't throw any in the Oregon game, but the senior safety, Jeremiah Denson, coming down with it there and picking off the Tulane quarterback. So that secondary, they're going to do well for Auburn this season.
No doubt.
Well, moving on from that, I guess we sort of touched on Booby getting too many carries. He 23 carries in that Tulane game. I'm not sure that's going to cut it, but I was glad to see that we were able to get some running done in that second half. Looks like Auburn finished 4.2 carries, another 4.2 yards per carry, another 23 carries for Booby Whitlow. However, there was an interesting spark in the run game there at the end. Joey Gatewood comes in, starts running that QB power that we really haven't seen since 2010. What did you see there looking at Joey Gatewood late in that Tulane game?
Well, I was very excited, and you know, sometimes, you know, in the past with Auburn quarterbacks, we're like, man, we're going to be good as long as, you know, XYZ quarterback stays healthy. We definitely found out that if, you know, something happens to Bo Nix, we got a good quarterback in Joey Gatewood. You know, he's not another Bo Nix, but that's almost a good thing. Because if somebody gets Bo Nix's number, you know, we can put Joey Gatewood in there, and it's going to be a change of pace. And another good thing is, you know, I really harp on this film study side of things and with coaching. Just having Joey Gatewood standing on the sidelines, coaches are going to have to waste some time in the film room watching him and, you know, preparing for him. And, you know, in college, you only got so many hours of practice that you're allowed to have. So anytime you can make your opponent have to prepare for something, that's less time they have to prepare for other stuff. And I just love that. Now, the big question mark I'll kind of leave for Tony to kind of take his guesses on is, does Gus have the guts to do it? Because he's not that riverboat gambler that, you know, past coaches like Tommy Tupperville would have been.
Well, you know, we want to believe that Joey is the Tim Tebow and Bo is Chris Leak, right, from that Florida team. And I know some Auburn fans would spit on the ground at that very idea. But what you don't want to see is the Malik Willis effect with that 2017 offense in Jarrett Stidham, where he sort of becomes a gimmick, and teams know what's coming. They know he's only going to get a snap or two. I would like to see Joey either get entire drives or maybe come in red zone situations and, again, get more than just one or two snaps. But I want to believe that Gus is setting something up. Joey's going to get to throw the ball, and it's not going to be just one or two trick plays, or at least I'm hoping so. But when the run game is working, it is hard to tell which direction the ball is going when you're having to account for both Booby Whitlow and another 6'5", 230-pound guy in Joey Gatewood. So I'm optimistic that Joey Gatewood's going to be able to help this football team this year. And as they say, the old cliche, he's only one play away from being the starting quarterback. So it's a good thing that he's sticking around, and I know this will earn him, you know, a lot of brownie points with the Auburn fan base if he can come in and just be a respectable backup and even change a pace, if you will.
Now let me ask you this, Tony. And there may be some fans out there wondering, you know, if you were the coach, how would you avoid, you know, the Kelly Bryant effect, you know, to keep Joey Gatewood's on the Auburn sidelines, you know, because Kelly Bryant, you know, he kind of dipped mid-season, and Trevor Lawrence took that injury, and Kelly Bryant was gone. How does Gus handle that situation?
Well, Kelly Bryant hadn't redshirted, so thanks to the new rule, Kelly Bryant could play in up to four games and still redshirt, and then transfer. Joey redshirted last year, so Joey would have had to leave before the season even started or he was going to lose this year of eligibility anyway. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that Joey Gatewood's going to be on this roster next season. I do believe that there's a world where he leaves, but there's no benefit in him leaving mid-season, especially if he wants to really help this team compete for a championship or something along those lines. He's already burned the year of eligibility. He's already played in a game. The four-game rule doesn't really apply here, so I don't think Auburn fans have anything to worry about as far as Joey leaving mid-season. But I cannot promise that he'll be here next year. Now, as looks like we've been going here about 30 minutes, so I just have a couple more points we want to bring up. But let's talk about Anthony Schwartz and his effect that it'll have on this offense. He broke his hand just a few weeks ago. He was sort of a ghost player in Oregon, and then in Tulane, they actually threw to him, Daniel, with a cast, or a soft cast, I think they said it was really more of a wrap, but he was open, he got hit, and he just couldn't quite catch the ball, and it was like Tulane had to defend that possibility for the rest of the game. I hope they don't rush him back for this Kent State game, but what could he mean for this offense, especially coming into that Texas A&M game here in 2 weeks?
Well, I mean, if he has that cast off, he's going to be dangerous. Because, I mean, he almost had that catch, as you mentioned, in that Tulane game. I mean, you know, they may throw to him one or two times just to, you know, see how it goes in a game-type situation. Because there is definitely a difference in making a catch in practice and making a catch in a game. So, you know, with a little bit of a weaker opponent, they may try that. And if he makes the catch here again, it tells Texas A&M, here's something else you better be ready for. I mean, I know I'm itching for him to get that cast off, because we know he's fast as lightning and
flash.
Yeah, I don't know if many people can catch him. You know, with a track guy, you're always like, well, if I can get the ball in him safely, he's going to be great. So, once he gets, and we already know he can catch with two hands. You know, he's kind of working on it with one hand, one good hand. You know, we'll say one and a half. So, you know, I got my fingers crossed that by that A&M game, he'll be ready. And I trust our coaching staff enough that, you know, they know what they're seeing in practice. They know exactly how hard they can push Schwartz in this game. And they'll only push him that far and no further. I'll have full confidence.
Yeah, I'd certainly hope so. Now, the only major negative spot, really outside of that offensive line struggling with the running game, that I've noticed is, what on earth happened to our punt coverage? Auburn, over the last two seasons, was a top 10 team in S&P for punt coverage. Teams, I don't remember the number off the top of my head, but Auburn all of last season combined allowed something around 30 punt return yards, and now Auburn's allowed well over 100 punt yards. Auburn is ranked dead last in the FBS in punt coverage. Daniel, what's happened? Is Sipos just booming that thing? Is he out kicking his coverage? I think I had read somewhere where the theory was maybe it was missed tackles, or maybe it's just Gus being scared to play some of his defensive and offensive starters and just a whole bunch of freshmen. How on earth has this punt coverage gone from great to you in one season?
Well, one thing that I have noticed is, you know, I don't know what it is, and I'm sure that it's being discussed in practice big time, is they're just not wrapping up like we're used to, you know. They're not bringing the wood. I'm not really sure why that is, because, you know, I'm not there in practice, you know. I don't know how many live punts they're doing in practice. You know, that could be an issue. But I do know that Gus, he's big on his special teams. You know, that's one thing he likes to pride himself in. And I have a lot of confidence that, you know, he's going to get it straight. And, you know, they may, you know, punt in some situations that we're not fully used to them punting in, just to work on that, you know, kind of treating this Kent State game as kind of a scrimmage, you know, not that we like to talk much about that other Alabama team in the state of Alabama, but, you know, this week Nick Saban took some criticism for scheduling a team like New Mexico State, and, you know, he kind of puffed his fist and pumped his chest and said, oh, you know, we'll play the teams that'll play us. And, you know, he's like, can you get a better in this game? You know, and he said, you know, if you approach it right, and I'm pretty sure Gus is approaching this Kent State game right, and I think they're going to really work and fine-tune some of this stuff, because I'm here to tell you, you know, I don't know how you felt about the Clemson game, but A&M gave Clemson a little bit of a game, and they're going to come, they're going to be ready to play some football come next week. We got to make sure we're ready to play football as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the most impressive thing to me was Clemson's defense, how they were able to lose so many guys to the draft and still absolutely shut down Texas A&M more or less. I don't know if close is really how I would describe that game, but Texas A&M is going to be competitive this year. I'm not saying that they're going to beat Alabama or LSU, but Auburn can't mess around. They're going to need to take this game very seriously. And I realize the road team often wins this series, but Kyle Field is quite the place to play, and there are a bunch of passionate fans, that's for sure. And it would definitely look good if Auburn could get them a win. But sort of moving on, and as we get closer to wrapping up here, I guess one thing I would just like to encourage people is, let's not overreact to this Tulane game. Gus Malzahn said at the beginning, before the game started, that he thought this was the best Power 5 team that Auburn's played as long as he's been here. That means, well, they're not exactly a pushover. And I realize fans wanted it to be a bit more of a blowout, but how good is Las Vegas in picking these spreads? It's not like Vegas predicted Auburn to win by 30. Phil Steele had Tulane as the 25th best defensive line, and I think that showed. And Vegas picked Auburn to win by 16. Auburn win by 18. They beat the spread. And I think it shows also in the AP voters how Auburn's gone up. And I just hear so many of these fans doom and gloom and, oh, since Auburn didn't beat Tulane by 35, we're just not that good. Guys, we didn't give up a touchdown. The defense looks great. Yes, it's a little concerning the offense didn't run the ball a little bit better. But they beat the spread, and guess what? Joey Gatewood need the ball in the red zone. What if Auburn goes ahead and scores a touchdown there to end the game? And the final score is 31-6. How do you feel about that score? Are you looking at that 18 points and maybe overreacting a little bit? Because when I look at that, I think Auburn was in control of the game the whole time. And I think we've seen Gus Malzahn coach teams get better and better week in and week out. And the best teams that do, the best teams that win championships, they get better every week. And like Daniel said, I think by the time we get to the end of the season, you're going to see that both Oregon and Tulane are going to have a lot of wins.
And don't get me wrong. Next week when we do this, if we're reviewing an 18-point win over Kent State, you're probably going to hear me saying, why don't we give Joey Gatewood a shot? Because an 18-point win over Kent State, that's not going to cut it with me. And, you know, I don't know how you feel, Tony, but I really feel like if this Kent State game isn't a lot like the New Mexico State-Alabama game, look out. They're going to be Auburn fans. They're going to be getting out their lighter, turning up the heat on the coaching hot seat there on the plane. And, you know, I might myself, you know, I try to be a sunshine guy myself. It might be cloudy days coming from D if we only have a 18-point win over Kent State.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, Daniel. Kent State is different, and I am very much a sunshine pumper. The early Vegas line is actually Auburn by 35. So, again, I would expect Auburn to shoot more for that spread. They were trying to build this as the Woody Barrett revenge game, and he actually got benched in the last game, and now we're not even sure if he's going to play, so we'll see. But if you need any reason to hate Kent State, Nick Saban graduated from Kent State. So I want to see Auburn not only beat that spread, but let's see if the defense can pitch a shutout. Let's see if the offense can try not to punt in the first half. Let's get a lot of these second stringers some playing time. Let's let Joey pass the ball. But more so than anything, I want to see Auburn run the ball. In the first half, both the Tulane and Oregon game, Auburn ran the ball pretty well in the second half. They looked fairly good. But the first half slow start, not against Kent State, Auburn. Let's figure out this run game. And Lord have mercy, let's not have Booby Whitlow carry the ball 23 yards. Let's get that number down to 15, maybe even just a first quarter pitch count. Let's keep those numbers down. Let's hopefully get DJ Williams healthy, get Sean Shivers in there, and let's run the ball early.
And one thing that I would love to see, and, you know, again, here comes the sunshine pumper and me. I'd love to see you know, optimistic here. I'd love to see Kent State not pass the 50-yard line like we saw a couple of years ago, not really sure if it was that year, in that Alabama-LSU game. I would love to see that, you know, kind of taking the shutout a step further, because if Kent State has a kicker that can kick a 50-plus yard field goal, I'd probably give them 3 points, because I'd like to see that.
Yeah. Well, in closing, guys, we'll talk a lot more about the Texas A&M matchup coming up in 2 weeks. Let's just enjoy what is hopefully going to be a easy blowout victory here at home. There's a little bit of controversy, or maybe controversy is the wrong word. Gus Malzahn throwing some shade at Nick Saban, and a lot of those bigwigs at Alabama complaining about how many times Bama has had these 11 a.m. and 12 o'clock kickoffs, and how Bama got another early kickoff. And Gus said he actually prefers the noon game to these 6 o'clock game that we're having here with Kent State, because he says it gives him more time to prepare for the next week. Maybe throwing a little shade there at Bama fans. Gus looks confident, hopefully not cocky, but he likes throwing some shade here this season. This is a new Gus. This is a confident Gus. And I think we're going to get it done here. And Daniel, you have anything else to say?
Well, I think one of the last things that I would say is, you know, if you could, for now, let's not have our hand on that, you know, hot seat of Gus, because, you know, he has good things coming, I think. And there's nobody else I would want at the helm right now, because I don't think Nick Saban likes going against Gus. And I like that, but that's kind of all I had.
Yeah. I mean, how many coaches can say that they've beaten Nick as many times as Gus Malzahn has? And this recruiting class coming in for 2020 is looking pretty incredible, and do not expect to keep this class together if Auburn decides to fire Gus. Only at Auburn could a coach go 2-0 or 3-0 and still have fans talking about the hot seat. Gus Malzahn is safe for now, and I'm optimistic that he's going to put together a pretty good season here. Thanks for listening, guys. If you'd like to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Tony the AU Tiger. Tony the AU Tiger. And Daniel, where can the folks find you at home?
Kind of the best thing right now to find me at is on Snapchat at DWelker13. I am planning on trying to get a little more active on the Twitter machine, and once I kind of get my feet under me there, I will give out that Twitter handle, so, because, you know, I don't want our fans to follow something as boring as what my Twitter is at the moment.
Understandable. Thanks for listening, guys. You're listening to the first episode of the All Auburn All In podcast. War Eagle, and good night.